Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the Copcast. You're receiving a slightly abbreviated version of the podcast this week. You've got Lucy Taylor and myself, Lauren Miner, today. Since you last heard from us, we've got the delightful news that Lucy Taylor has now been promoted to a partner, which is very lovely. So congratulations, Lucy.
Yay! No pressure. I'm not sure that my views or my my insights will be any better. But yes, they saw fit to give me the title. So it's good. It's great news. And it feels like ages since we recorded, actually. And we apologise for that. And we wanted to get this out and get it out really quickly because for those listening, you'll remember we touched on the issues surrounding Britney's conservatorship in our very, very first podcast. And given the news that's emerged from the proceedings there, we just wanted to pick up on some of the things that Britney has said in her statement. And there's an awful lot of kind of trying to fit that into a an England and Wales or a UK jurisdiction, and people are saying, you know, how can these things be happening? And I think, you know, if you have suffered from mental health problems or if you have been affected by incapacity or you've had a family member, then you may well be listening to that and thinking some of these things do happen. And obviously what we're hearing from Britney is horrific and a very personal situation, and it's all specific to her. And we can't pass judgment on that. That is her opinion. But there are certain threads that are coming through it that we would like to kind of pick up and almost set the record straight a little bit, because I've been listening to quite a lot of radio. I've been at home this week and so much public opinion is emerging on this, huge amounts of public opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe from just our point as lawyers, we can shed some light maybe on some things. So we just wanted to get together quickly. Unfortunately, Rebecca is poorly, so she can't join us. So we thought we'd just jump on this very quickly. Lauren, you've had a look at the statement, the transcript.
I have, yes. I've seen the transcript of Britney's speech or testimony, if you like. I think just the first thing I'd say is that, firstly, thrilled to see that she's fully been heard. Unedited, she's been able to speak freely in front of the court, which is brilliant from our point of view. I suppose one of the things that's key to us in the way we do our job is, just to backtrack a little bit for a little bit of context, if you haven't heard our previous episode, we act...
Why would people have not heard our first episode, Lauren?
Well, good point.
If you haven't
heard it, go back and listen to it immediately.
Absolutely.
Listen to our wonderful words of wisdom. But we essentially do the UK equivalent of working for or with a UK equivalent of a conservator. So we might be the professional version of, in this situation, Britney's dad, which, fear not, please do not put on the same, paint us with the same brush that Britney's father has been painted with. We are professionally regulated and rigorously so by various courts and other government bodies. We don't just go off willy-nilly, sending people off to do performances in Vegas.
I would be quite
also,
up for that, though.
Big disclaimer. Yeah, so would I. Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for it. Obviously, not against somebody's will. But we're also not allowed to monetarily benefit from our individuals' estates. We do get paid for our work, but that is in a very specific and stringent set of circumstances.
And actually, even if you are a family member who's acting as an attorney or deputy, there are really strict rules around how you are, I'm going to say paid, because you can receive expenses, yeah, and you can be reimbursed for out of pocket expenses and things. But you know, there are very strict rules around that, and you are not
or recompensed
not in the way that Britney's father has. So
in the way Britney's dad appears.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I'm really pleased to hear that she has had her thoughts heard. I think we said right from day one, it's absolutely at the forefront of our call to protection to take into account that individual's thoughts, wishes and feelings. So yeah, we were
absolutely, and this was the take, wasn't it, in the first episode. We were saying what concerns us most about the Britney situation is that we don't feel that her thoughts, wishes and feelings had been heard. So a drastic change of events since the first episode is that we now have this testimony. I do think it doesn't sit quite right with me, the fact that this was essentially live streamed to the entire press when it happened. I mean, there is a belief in the UK system, and there's a project ongoing now actually to do with the court protection and that being observed by members of the public to ensure the best interests of that client are being heard. So it's right that it's heard in a way, but also this is somebody's very vulnerable, raw testimony, and I'm not quite sure how right it is that is just straight out put out into the press. You know, perhaps it would have been better if
I agree
heard privately first,
and we've been criticized in terms of our call to protection of being the secret court and definitely needing to have more transparency, going back to the kind of media attention and the press coverage that Britney got all those years ago, there's been quite a few apologies that have appeared, and that's really great, and obviously we've moved on so far in terms of mental health and recognizing where people are having difficulties, and that is brilliant, but equally at the same time, it's still a bit of a circus, isn't it? You had a different type of circus all those years ago.
Excellent pun there. Didn't Britney Spears have an album called
Maybe.
Circus?
we had that press coverage all those years ago, which was really derogatory, and presented her in an awful light. Although we are apologising and we're being a bit friendlier towards her, we are still desperately wanting to hear what's going on in her life. It's invasive, it's recorded, it's straight out there. And it's really personal stuff.
This
so, yeah, that's interesting.
There's definitely a balance there between making sure there's observation and sort of checks and balances, but not completely rinsing somebody through the public eye, which is, of course, what Britney has said has been horrible for her. So at least she's been able to say how that experience has been for her, which is a good start, I suppose.
And I think some of the it's all very emotive. Some of the things that I think have really been picked up on by everyone who's interested in following this for whatever reason. The issue with the restrictions in terms of her contraception, her birth control, the fact that she's not allowed to visit a doctor to have her device removed. She wants to have a family. And I would like to try to kind of set the record straight that that does happen in this country.
It does
happen. There are a string of cases where the Court of Protection has been involved in decisions surrounding individuals, their ability to make decisions in relation to consent to sexual intercourse and as part of that, their decisions around contraception. And the court has decided that in certain cases, people ought to have devices fitted at the time of maybe a cesarean section against that individual's will, arguably. I mean, the individual would be lacking capacity, but Even if that individual didn't want that to happen, if they were determined to lack capacity to make the decision, then that would happen, and therefore arguably against their will. Mm-hmm. And I think what we would just like to say on that is that there are checks and balances, very clear checks and balances. That isn't a decision that is made lightly. Absolutely recognise that that is a huge interference with that person's autonomy, their human rights. Yep. And to offer some insight, I don't want to use the word reassurance, but insight, before a decision like that is made, absolutely the individual is heard.
Yes,
there are a team of people involved, including, you know, I'm sure social workers, medical practitioners, family.
Mm-hmm. People who've known that individual over the course of years.
Absolutely.
As well,
so. And so not just family, you know, and we don't know what's gone on in the US in Britney's case. We don't know what parties have been involved in the decisions that have led to that situation. But from our point of view, it does happen, but it does, isn't yes. a decision that happens lightly by any stretch of imagination. And there are so many parties involved. Yeah. And I think it's also relevant to say that everything is kept under review. And this is
absolutely, it's never a
absolutely,
final decision.
And we'll come on to that in the context of everything we're talking about. All of this, you know, all of these issues are always things that are kept under what should be ongoing constant review.
And
that's what we're seeing in Britney's case, aren't we? You know, however long her conservatorship has gone on for, it's now being reviewed. I know she's asked for it to be reviewed before. She hasn't been successful in removing her father on those occasions. In England and Wales in particular, if somebody has lacked capacity and it's been necessary for them to have that deputyship, which if you like is our equivalent of a conservatorship, mm-hmm. I think it's really important to say that that is never given on the basis that it would never be reviewed. In fact, there is a positive
Absolutely.
Duty on that deputy, that that deputyship
Absolutely.
Is kept
yeah.
under review, and if at any point in time that individual has regained capacity, then there is a positive duty on that deputy to seek further directions from the Court of Protection.
If anything, that's almost the ultimate aim, isn't it? In some way, we want to do everything in our power to restore those rights and freedoms to that individual. We don't willingly take away that autonomy of that individual. We only do it where it's strictly necessary, and even where we are taking on responsibility for that individual, we're consulting them at all points. We're doing everything we can to involve their wishes and feelings. Where they can make a decision that's maybe a smaller decision that they can make themselves, we will absolutely follow that guidance.
And where they can't,
and I think there's an assumption,
and that's the other thing to say, even where it's you know, either it's a more significant decision and they haven't been able to make the decision, they haven't got capacity to make that decision, we will always try and implement what part of that decision they might have been able to give a feeling or
exactly.
a wish about.
And equally so, if we're able to get an understanding of what that person might have done when they did have capacity, if they previously had capacity. So for instance, a good example is I just had a meeting with a financial advisor this week about somebody who now lacks capacity to manage her financial affairs. But a few years ago, she was very involved with investments, really knowledgeable, really enjoyed working it out and having those conversations. And she went for a medium risk portfolio because she'd had that understanding. Now, had I not known that she'd wanted that previously, probably would have reduced it right down to a low risk, very low risk, cautious approach. But knowing that she was able to make those decisions and knowing that she's got plenty of funds to support the rest of her life, we made a decision that actually, given her previous involvement, her previous wishes and feelings, there's no reason why we can't continue with that approach, where her funds aren't aren't a risk. You know, we can't take that risk. So, you know, if there is any way in which we can bring in all those other factors, you know, thoughts, wishes and feelings, whether that's from the individual previously, whether the individual can voice some of those things now, whether family members, medical professionals can feed in, those every decision we make, even if it's a simple one, we are drawing on all of those resources. It's not a case of, well, I think this, therefore I'm going to do it. It's never that simple.
And capacity should be reviewed as any other form of disability, if you like, in the sense that it is something that we're potentially, with therapy and support, somebody can recover from. So, you know, taking somebody, for example, who is has had a stroke, you know, following a stroke, somebody is offered rehabilitation in terms of maybe that's therapy to help them recover the use of their speech, or maybe they need some physiotherapy to help them back with their mobility. Capacity is absolutely the same. So it can be temporary, and in some cases it can be permanent. But the starting point for us is always to look at, this person has the ability, and what can we do to support? And for some people, that will be a journey towards regaining capacity.
Absolutely.
And I think particularly looking at Brittany, with for somebody who was so young, and I'm not saying age is a determining factor, but absolutely there is more in favour of somebody who might have disability in terms of their capacity when they are younger, whether that be through a mental health condition or a physical condition. It's always a case of, you've got to be working with that individual with the end result hopefully being that they are able to either regain capacity or at the very least do as much as that individual is capable of.
Absolutely.
Heard that there is this suggestion, in fact it's more than a suggestion, I understand it's on the court record, that 13 years ago Brittany was diagnosed with early onset dementia. And I do, I mean, I've heard some really interesting comments on that, you know, along the lines of, well, how can she have dementia if she can remember all of those dance moves and all of the lyrics? And I mean, you know, yeah, I take the point, but it isn't as black and white as that. And somebody who has very advanced dementia can still remember lyrics to songs. It really does depend on how that individual's brain has been affected. So that is a little bit of a misconception. But the point being that if somebody was diagnosed with early onset dementia 13 years ago, you would probably think that we would see Brittany's presentation slightly differently to what we're seeing now. So that does cast a doubt.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, even with something like dementia, which is by nature degenerative, it doesn't mean that you throw in the towel and go, oh, well, you've got a degenerative condition.
Yeah.
You shouldn't work on recovering the ability. And I was thinking about this yesterday, and actually it was aptly timed. Yeah, I had in a piece of post for one of my former clients, and she was a young lady who'd been injured in a road traffic accident before she was born. So her mother was actually a victim of a road traffic accident, and my client was born prematurely, and there had been some issues. She had grown up, had a little bit of delayed development, and consequently didn't have capacity at 18. And we often see this, but was very capable of rehabilitation and with our support and, you know, working with us and her therapist and the people that are involved in her wider team, such as her financial advisor and her partner and her parents, she was able to gain capacity. I had the pleasure of speaking with her this week to find out where she was living, send her this piece of post. And she's now got two children. She's got her own business. And she's doing fantastically well.
Amazing.
And that's what it's about, isn't it? You know, it's very much about that.
Yeah.
And Yeah, sadly, some people won't ever get to that level, but you've always got to be on that path. I think even with older clients, exactly. You know, it's important to recognise that, okay, some people, degenerative, won't get any better, but equally, it doesn't mean that you stop giving them choices either. Yeah,
exactly. You can either slow the progression, or you can put support structures in place. I mean, I suppose use an analogy of a physical disability. If you say somebody's, you know, paralyzed from the waist down, yes, they might never be able to walk again, but that doesn't mean that you don't get a wheelchair. That doesn't mean you don't consider physiotherapy still. That doesn't mean you don't, you know, look at modern technologies to help support those things. It doesn't mean you stop engaging altogether. You know, it's about advocating for the rights of that individual and trying to do everything you can to put in place those support structures.
And it does feel a little bit with Brittany that there hasn't been a gradual sort of desire to move things in a different direction for her.
I was just going to say, I wonder whether that's to do with the approach in the US compared to the approach in England or Wales. You know, like we were saying, that it's sort of always our ultimate aim to try and restore capacity if we can, and we're always trying to build towards that. Whereas one of the points we made in our first podcast was that in the US, when we were talking about the documentary, there's an attorney, a US equivalent of a lawyer, that says, I've never seen one of these conservatorships be withdrawn.
Yep.
So there's maybe an assumption that it is permanent there. So maybe that sort of key difference in approach.
It feels very draconian. It does feel very draconian.
Like the conservator has a blanket authority to make decisions X, Y, and Z. And I suppose one of the, you know, when we're talking about the sort of institutions that Brittany's maybe been put into, against her will, yes, almost certainly. But in the US, it seems as if Brittany's father has just had the authority to make that decision without having to revert back to the court, or without having to consult other professionals or other people around Brittany. Whereas in England and Wales, we certainly wouldn't be able to make that decision as a one-off just with our authority. You would have to go back to court for a decision.
Absolutely. You know, and there are people who unfortunately will have to be sectioned in our jurisdiction.
It absolutely happens.
Yeah. And that arguably is against that person's will, and in many cases will be against their will. Yes, we are taking mm-hmm. away their autonomy, but it happens within very strict legal parameters. There are mm-hmm. requirements for that to be certified by a certain number of medical practitioners. It is kept under review. There are mm-hmm. very clear timescales and timetables in terms of what happens in those situations. So I agree. Mm-hmm. I think we don't know, and to be really clear about it, we absolutely don't know the exact details, but it feels absolutely like Brittany's father has been given very wide ranging powers, almost been handed complete control, and I'm not entirely convinced that would not happen here. In the current day, it does not happen. Welfare proceedings, particularly in our court of protection, are subject to multi-team input, ongoing review, specific decisions.
It's so careful, isn't it? I don't know if anybody's either read the book or seen the film. Of a good example of this is the Children Act by Ian McEwan, or the film with them of the same name. That's considering a young boy who's 17 and I believe he's a Jehovah's Witness and is refusing a blood transfusion. And you can see the entire trajectory of that plot line is all of the meticulous conversations and negotiations that happen to make that decision. It's by no means a split second decision on basic facts. It's a multifaceted and complex series of conversations and negotiations to reach that point. And I suppose that's you know, looking at Brittany's testimony, it seems she seems to be saying that she's, you know, her father, she uses the word, enjoys the control. She's told what to do. We do have to take it with a pinch of salt because obviously she's been in this situation for 13 years. She will, I don't imagine anyone in that situation, given what she's described, would feel comfortable with the scenario. So there will, you know, there will be an element of extreme thought about it, I imagine.
And I think you're right. And I think I was thinking, you know, what's the potential outcome here? And I sincerely hope that she gets the right support, because I think that's the other thing to bear in mind, that, you know, we've talked very much about a supportive framework to enable somebody to manage their own affairs, whether that's because they've made a recovery or they've been in a period of temporary incapacity. But almost on the opposite end of the scale is if Brittany were to go from being in this very, very draconian framework that she's in to being given complete control,
complete
without the right support. And that's arguably,
that could be just as damaging.
Absolutely. And arguably you could say, but if that's the right thing to do, then so be it. And absolutely, you know, we have clients who have been restored and within 12 months, they've spent every single penny that they had, and have made a series of decisions that we wouldn't have made. But at the end of the day, if somebody has capacity, you can argue that, well, they can make it in whatever decisions they want. And that is right. Equally, I think that you have to at least try to offer a supportive framework, try to work with the individual. I do worry that she's had so many years of such heavy-handed input that she will potentially, if put in that situation where there is she is restored and she's able to manage things herself. I don't know if she has the skills or ability to do it. That doesn't mean she doesn't have capacity,
that would be my concern,
but that she doesn't have the actual skills anymore. And I was hearing, I think it was from the documentary maker actually, who said that she doesn't even have a bank account. She doesn't have access to a bank account. And I find that absolutely astonishing, because you cannot have access to all of your financial affairs, but to totally take away control so that you have no access to even a basic bank account. I worry what will happen. I worry what will happen, particularly because
you could forget, couldn't you, how to use...
Contactless.
Would you even know, remember how to use a contact... Yeah, that's completely alien. That must be completely alien to her. You do
absolutely
think, don't you? It's a lot changes.
Absolutely.
In
13 years. I do worry that because it has been so heavy-handed, she will reject because of, you know, the fear and the anxiety, no doubt, that will come with it in terms of, you know, trust aspects as well. I really hope that she gets the right support to be able to live her life as she would like, but with the support that she needs, even if that, you know, is something that's temporary. It's
I suppose some of the ways in which we might, if Brittany was one of our clients, for example, some of the ways we might manage this differently. Obviously, again, disclaimer, we obviously don't know all of the facts of this situation, and it's been a long time and there are a lot of issues. But even our more, on the face of it, most vulnerable, least capacitous clients still have a lot of freedom. The majority of our clients, unless they're very young children, for example, will have a bank account of some kind, will have access to money, will have a card, will have, even if it's a case of very gradually drip feeding somebody £5 a day or something, you know, that's, you can tailor it. It's not a case of you have no money and no access to money, or you have £100 million. You know, there's a lot in between.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we would want to encourage a gradual increase in that management to help somebody learn how to do it rather than going from one extreme
to the other.
That's
it. I mean, how can you do things if you've never had the ability to try? Yeah, and it might start with somebody being able to manage a small amount with a budget plan put in place, and then that might go on to increasing their ability to maybe take on responsibility of paying a utility bill. Just a simple act of paying a utility bill, not even budgeting out what the cost of their living costs are. Yes, it's a process that you go through, but the physical acts, as well as understanding, I have X amount of money, I know that I need to pay these things, that leaves me with this, and the type of thing that we all do every month. That in itself is a process to go through. But until you start to give that back, and we're talking about, I don't know the value of Brittany's estate, but there are going to be more complex issues because of the nature
of
it.
This is also something I was going to say. Most you or I, many people listening to this probably don't have the ability to manage the sorts of business and financial arrangements that Britney Spears is involved in. How many of us would know how to negotiate, a deal to perform in Las Vegas? I imagine not many of us. So there's a great difference between, it's quite possible that maybe it is right that there is a conservatorship in place for Britney. Does it need to be as draconian as this? Almost certainly not. But it's a process, isn't it? It's not a case of you have complete freedom or none at all.
And that's what
I sound a bit like a broken record,
that's
now, don't I? But that's
I agree,
that's the crux
and I'm
of
not
it.
Because I don't know the American jurisdiction the framework that they're working in. I sincerely hope it's not an all or nothing. I really hope that it can be, that she gets support, and it may be that actually she doesn't want that support. What Brittany, may be pushing for is she just wants out of all of this, and that is really common. I think we've talked about it before, that people just want to move on with their lives. I actually think, as you say, that could be as damning. And so I really hope that there can be a framework, but equally, I really hope that she gets her opinion on how that should work, and also who, because I think that's the key thing, isn't it?
Yes,
I think that's absolutely vital. She's not going to trust the people around her.
Exactly. We see this with lots of our clients, especially where there's been, some sort of medical negligence or something. There's their families. There's a massive mistrust in professionals, and it takes so much. It's almost takes more time to start building back that rapport, helping those people realize that they can trust professionals where they're the right ones and they have their best interests at heart. And I think for Brittany, if it was me, I'm pretty confident I wouldn't want to engage in any professionals or, with any court processes after this. It'd be enough for a lifetime, wouldn't it? So I just hope that, maybe if she's starting to be listened to a little bit more, she's able to say, I like this doctor or I like this therapist, and can we do more with that person? And, can we start to build that up gradually or something? But it's all very hypothetical, isn't it?
It's a really difficult one. I think, this is the second cast we've done on this, and it definitely won't be the last, because we are following it. It's so close to what we do, and we're really interested in it. And I know that lots of hopefully listeners are as well. So we will watch and see what happens, and we will no doubt compare and contrast with the parameters and the legislation and what we work within, and we will come back again when we know more. But I'm really hoping that it's not an all or nothing situation, even though, and I'm prepared to nail my colours to the flag and say this, I suspect that isn't what Brittany wants. I have to say that I would have concerns for somebody going from being within such a restricted and draconian regime to being handed back complete control overnight. But there we go, that's just my view. Right,
I feel this. I feel similarly. What I would say is that when we talked about this previously on a podcast, there was lots of talk on Twitter, on LinkedIn. There's lots of talk in the more general sort of social media world. I've seen a lot on Instagram about this sorts of thing, and there's a lot of conversation stemming from this about disability rights and advocacy for people with disabilities more generally, which is always great to see these conversations opening up. But please do engage with us on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think, how you feel about it. Also, not just people who are in the same profession as us. It's interesting to hear how this comes across to people outside of this world. Let's have the conversation. It's really interesting to see something like this in the popular press. I hope it does lead to more open conversation, whether that be about mental health generally, whether that be about how we can look after and support people, even in less formal structures. And I hope we get to talk about this more in future. Maybe we can have a sort of phone-in session at some point. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can hear us again, hopefully now, I believe, on your popular podcasting streams. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, hopefully all being well. And feedback always welcome. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll speak to you again soon.